first meeting of the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee this in 2008. Before we start, I'd like to do a little housekeeping. There are some, in your folder, there is some information about committee members, how to contact one another, about who the staff are. And in preparation for the meeting today, there's also a handout on the chapter of legislation we passed last year that legislated the study that was done during the interim and the report that we're going to hear today. And there also is a handout that was presented, that was put together by Sandra Boone, that is a very fair, I think, representation of the work that the Climate Change Advisory Group did, the draft recommendations, and then the governor's proposal. And also there are some additional proposals that were made by the governor that were in addition to the recommendations of the Climate Change Advisory Group. But it helps to give a format to the layout of the proposals. And at this time, we do have some new staff. First of all, I'd like to welcome Senator Kevin Dahl, who is the newest member of our committee. He was elected during a special session this past year. And we now have the privilege of having two Senator Dahls spelled differently in our committee. And Senator John Dahl is not here yet, but he is the vice chair of the committee. And I'd also like to welcome our committee clerk, Leanne Tashini, who's, you want to stand up, Leanne? Standing, who's over here. And you'll probably see a lot of her, and she will be available to help you. The rest of us know each other from last year, and so we'll move right into our presentation. And I'm going to invite to the table Deputy Commissioner, Director Edward Garvey of the new Office of Energy Security.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Edward Garvey. I am the Director of the Office of Energy Security, and I can't tell you how honored I am to have you all back and to be here before you on your first committee hearing. And I'm pleased to be able to present to you and talk to you about some of the climate change issues, where we've been and where we are and where we're hoping to go. If I can get this. Let's start with the law. The Next Generation Energy Act of 2007, 216H.02, subdivision 1, established our goals. 15% below 2005 emission levels by 2015, 30% below 2005 emission levels by 2025, and 80% below 2005 emission levels in 2050. Challenging, aggressive, but as you'll see, I believe they are achievable. The next portion of this, I think, sort of sets, in many respects, the framework for where we're at and perhaps addresses some of the perhaps confusion that's been happening of late. Subdivision 2 of 216H02 requires that, says, by February 1, 2008, the Commissioner of Commerce, myself now under the executive order, shall submit to the legislature a climate change action plan that meets the requirements of this section. I'm supposed to do that in consultation with other states. So there's a statutory requirement for me to file something on February 1. Subdivision 3 basically says that the plan required in Subdivision 2, which I just sort of talked about, must be developed through a structured, broadly inclusive, stakeholder-based review of potential policies and initiatives that will reduce statewide greenhouse gas emissions from a broad range of sources and activities. We know that as the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. The commissioner shall engage a nationally recognized independent expert entity to conduct the stakeholder process. We did that. We engaged the Center for Climate Strategies in February of 2007 to do that. The report of the stakeholder process must form the basis of the plan submitted by the commissioner under Subdivision 2. So it sort of says that I had to file something on February 1. It had to be based, what I had to file on February 1 had to have its basis in the stakeholder process. We felt it important to comply with that law. We felt that that we could move forward with that, and we thought it was useful to provide some information and some direction, at least where we think from the administration, Governor Pawlenty's perspective on how we should proceed, and particularly since, as you'll see or see in a couple minutes, the report from the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group is not going to be ready or finalized for a couple months. The principles that went into that February 1 plan that I filed was first to make sure that we do achieve the reduction goals from the statute. We believe that the plan we put forward can and will do that. We did want to fulfill the reporting requirement. We did base it on the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group work. It was based on, it was not the entirety of that work. It was dedicated and labeled as preliminary in nature as a plan because it was not complete. The report and all the work that the MCAG has been working on is not complete. So we had to do the plan that we did was preliminary in nature. We did recognize, and we do think it's very important, and it'll be a very a common theme of my presentation and of all of the efforts from myself and the administration on going forward, is the implementing the actions that we have already put in motion. We believe that we want to take steps that are thoughtful, deliberative, and incremental in nature to achieve the goals. We believe that those actions should be tailored for Minnesota. We believe that they need to represent and provide opportunities for all peoples and all communities in the state of Minnesota. And they need to be compatible with regional, national, and global actions. Those are the guiding principles that went into that plan. Governor Pawlenty, in yesterday morning's State of the State, echoed this very same message when he said,
Deputy Commissioner, let me just interrupt you for a minute. Were these principles that were laid out by the Climate Change Advisory Group, or where did these principles arise?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, those are the principles that are guiding those of us in the administration how we believe the best way to proceed.
Okay.
And they were the guiding principles for the components of the plan, that the preliminary plan that we presented on February 1st. Governor Pawlenty, in yesterday's State of the State, echoed these principles more succinctly than I did when he said, we should also take further steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But it is important that our efforts ensure jobs are not lost as a result, and Minnesota does not place itself at a competitive disadvantage. Principles for moving forward to achieve the goals. Let me turn to the Climate Change Advisory Report itself, because I think this is important context. The first draft of the report went on the web sometime last night. It's now available. This is it, in its entirety, with several sections still in process. MCAG and technical working group members will have 2 weeks to provide comments, editorial comments, on this report. Those comments will be, to the extent possible and appropriate, incorporated by the drafters, Center for Climate Strategies, into a new draft that will be submitted and released on March 5th. At that time, they will also, Center for Climate Strategies, have run a new set of numbers necessitated by a change in a set of assumptions made by one of the technical working groups that weren't able to be done by now because they all had shifted from doing the calculations to doing the drafting of the text. But that timing works out fine. There'll be a conference call, we believe, or some mechanism, where all of the advisory group members will be able to get back together to offer final judgment on the report itself during the week of March 17th. All of those comments will then be finally compiled and put into a final draft report by the Center for Climate Strategies and made available for public comment between March 24th and April 11th. Those public comments will be appended or inserted. We're trying to figure out how to do this. They're not editorial. They're not changes to the text. They're comments on the findings, conclusions, analysis, or whatever the public wishes to comment, and we want to make sure we integrate them and so that a reader that picks it up in the future, you, can basically sort of say, when you've looked at a particular option and a commenter has commented on it, you can sort of see that in the same chapter or the same section rather than basically trying to flip to the end of a large document. We're going to have to try to figure out to do that. But that's so that so in the end, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the advisory groups report as we're envisioning it will not be ready until April 25th. It's further out than we had hoped and we had expected, but we knew we weren't going to be able to have it ready by February 1st when the statute required a report to be a plan to be filed. So we went ahead and concluded that we would file a plan based upon what we knew at the time and the principles and policies that we think we can and should move forward with. This is what the table of contents. You go to the website, and I can take you there with the power of, there we are. You go to the website, minclimatechange.us. You go over to the left side tabs under MCCAG, Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. Click on it. It opens up and you'll see this will be the history of all the eight meetings. This will be the history of all the eight meetings. Scroll down gently and you start seeing table of contents, acknowledgments, etc., the chapters. The executive summary is still being drafted, which is why that doesn't light up, but you can sort of see each of those sections and each of the appendices. And when I printed out all these, that's what I got. Is this about sort of approximately 3 inches of material? So just, I show this to you and I convey this to you to explain how extraordinary amount of work and analysis and effort that has been put into by, 100 plus people, 56 MCAG members, another 50 plus technical work group members and working on it. They have produced an extraordinary amount of work. It's very detailed. Sets of options with lots and lots of details and assumptions and calculations that went into that. They could not be appropriately summarized right now. But what we did on February 1st was try to basically put forward a plan on how we could move forward, at that time to meet the statute. Let me go back to the PowerPoint, and I'll walk through a couple of the tentative findings that we have. You've seen this chart. You've seen actually variations of this chart. The MCAG members who are in the audience have seen this chart or seen variations of this chart. But this chart is new as of yesterday, and you've seen numbers move. But the important part to be thinking about this still remains the same. The blue line is our base case, the projections of where our carbon emissions would be for the state of Minnesota were we to do nothing. The red line is the calculated reductions stemming from existing actions. Existing actions are the renewable energy standard, the demand efficiency conservation program that was part of the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007 that you all helped draft. MERP, the biofuels, very important part, and it's one of those things I want to basically emphasize because from our perspective, it is very important that we achieve and implement the existing actions, many of which that have just been put into place within a year. And so we're just starting to get those implemented. And so it's very important that we get those implemented if we want to meet the goals. Second, you see two lines that are overlapping, a black line and a green line. The black line is the target. Those are the numerical targets. Those are 15% below 2005 emission levels in 2015 and 30% below 2005 and 2025. The green line are the calculated emission reductions that will be achieved by the policy options that the Climate Change Advisory Group has developed in this report. So the news from this chart is, in my opinion, we have an aggressive set of goals. They are achievable with things that we know and we can do, but they also require us to do the things that we've already put underway. And in my opinion and my recommendation is that needs to be our primary emphasis right now, is implementing and implementing well the things that we just started doing within the last 18 months. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the same chart, but numerically derived. You can sort of, I can walk you through this if you want. It's sort of busy, but it's sort of if you want to sort of look at the actual numbers behind it. This is the chart. This is the spreadsheet chart that sort of results in that chart I just walked you through.
Deputy Commissioner, I'm thinking it would be very helpful at some point to walk people through so that they understand how we're going to reach the reductions that we're aiming for, to be able to point out how they're going to add up to the reductions we're hoping to achieve.
Okay. There's a lot behind that, Madam Chair. And there may be a couple other slides that may be able to be more I try to, at this point, not get too far down in the details, and we can sort of go through the high level, and we can go deeper if and when that's appropriate.
Okay.
Let me sort of walk through. This is just a calculation of what the numbers that go into that chart are. This starts at, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this starts to provide a little bit of the answer at a high level. To that question, okay, where do you get those savings from, and how would you achieve them? What did the advisory group get? This is a listing of the six of the calculations of carbon savings credits, carbon savings coming out of five of the technical working groups. RCI stands for residential, commercial, and industrial is primarily the energy efficiency component. Energy supply is the electricity supply. TLU is transportation land use. AFW is agriculture, forestry, and waste. And what this chart sort of shows you in a very quick way, columns 1 and 2, 15 and 2015, 2025, shows you the cumulative savings of each of the various options that each of the technical work groups developed. So, for example, I'll just pick AFW, Agriculture, Forestry, and Waste. Of the 10 options, I believe that's the number, that AFW analyzed, those options would result in 13.2 million metric tons of carbon equivalent savings in 2015 and 29.5 million ton of carbon equivalent reductions in 2025. Far and away, candidly, the largest savings of any of the technical work groups. But that you see that to get to get, when you sort of use this quantification of process, you need every one of them, but at the same time, you still can't necessarily do every one at the same time. And so one of the things that I'll be talking about is where we go and beyond, and one of the things that we put in our plan was some of those kinds of inclinations. The third column, the 2008 to 2025, is a cumulative of what you get over the 17-year lifespan between today and 2025. The million-dollar net present value is similarly the analysis that the Center for Climate Strategies came up with, is what we think the aggregate / cumulative costs to the state of Minnesota will be to implement the activities that is recommended by the technical working group. In this case, just for the record, so you know, negative numbers are good, they're savings. Positive numbers are not so good, are not as good, because they're costs. This one sort of shows a net positive impact of $726 million net costs of that. I mean, the calculations are what they are, ma'am, right, at least right now. And then the final one is the dollars per. What does the calculations show? How much do you get per ton? And that's sort of helpful when you start comparing the various options to each other. And I'll bring that up right now.
Deputy Commissioner, Senator Dahl has a question here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, on that, if we could go back to that last slide, just on the residential, commercial, industrial sector there, what you're saying is how much we can save by some of these actions that are proposed in the study. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, above and beyond current / existing actions. These are all above and beyond.
Okay. Madam Chair, then Deputy Senator Commissioner, it seems like that's I was under the understanding that was a large sector that we could address, and it seems like that's the area where we get the least amount of savings above and beyond what we're already doing. Is that what I'm reading here?
Deputy Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, members of the committee, my answer is yes and no. In a sense that energy efficiency is one of the largest reduction efforts for carbon that you can do. But remember, these numbers don't count one of the nation's leading energy efficiency programs that we adopted and are trying to implement under the demand efficiency program. So the question that the group was saying, how much more can we do beyond what we're already doing? And that's where you need to actually look. We need to look at the actual text, and there'll be all the members who are going to start seeing these numbers for the first time today, tomorrow, as they look at it themselves, and ask whether your assessment is actually correct or not. I mean, that's actually the edit, but that's what this says.
Okay. Madam Chair and Deputy
Senator
Commissioner.
Dahl.
I'm looking at 2025, and I see it's a lower, even a lower number on that first line there. And, you know, as we start to build more buildings and we put more green design in them, making them more energy efficient, shouldn't we be seeing even a greater savings, you know, later in the latter years?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chairman, Senator Dahl, members of the committee, the answers to those questions there are a lot of experts in the room and a lot of folks who will be paying attention to them. But the key to actually understanding these numbers is looking at the underlying sets of assumptions that were in the calculations.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, I think that's the way you have to explain why there's less savings. Remember, RCI, the top line, fuels and non-electricity, is fuels and non-electricity. The second one is the RCI and energy supply, and that's your energy efficiency from electricity. That's why there's those two categories. Now that I think I'm – now that I got I,
okay.
Did that help you a little bit?
It helps better. I guess we'll have to see the assumptions underlying this.
And that's what sort of – that's why part of this going into February 1st and what we had to put forward was awkward. But the document –
I'll continue listening.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Garvey, so these numbers that you have in each column are if we did, if we adopted every, all the recommendations of the MCAG in each of those categories, this is what you're projecting as the savings, right?
Madam Chairman, Senator Anderson,
Commissioner.
Members of the committee, these numbers were supplied to me yesterday afternoon by Center for Climate Strategies. They're the calculations that they've come up with. What their addition is for each of the options if they were to be implemented as they've been calculated and proposed by the technical working groups.
And can you, Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson.
Can you add up the like the in the first column 22.2 tons? I assume that's million tons of carbon. I don't know what MMTCO2E. Does that mean million tons of carbon?
Madam
Deputy
Chair,
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, members of the committee. Million metric tons of carbon equivalent.
Okay.
That's
what
the little E stands for, equivalent, because
equivalent.
There just to make sure there are seven greenhouse gases. They each have a different carbon forcing components. Methane is a significant multiple of carbon, but everyone tries to calculate it down to a common denominator.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
So our goals, as everyone will remember, require by 2015 a 15% reduction. By 2025, a 30% reduction. So what percentages do those ton amounts, you know, in terms of reduction from 2005, what percentages are they?
Are those Deputy Commissioner.
You see, if I may stand up, I'll just sort of shout. I'll just
take it with you.
For the tape, yeah. You see the 2022 there and the 50 there.
This is on your previous
slide. It's on the previous slide. Mm-hmm. You also roughly see that those correlate because those numbers add up to the green line. So those are roughly sort of overlapping the percentage reductions.
Okay, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to go back to Senator Dahl's question, take a stab at it. See if I got it right, because of course I care a lot about the Energy Efficiency Act, and so I'm curious about these numbers too. I'm wondering if these numbers are measured against today, and they're not measured against. So the baseline against which the savings is measured is what's put out today, what kind of carbon is put out today, and so then as you see the number get smaller over time. What that perhaps is recognizing is that even though we're saving electricity, we're not having to generate as much electricity as we were before, there's still greater demand going up. So we're building more buildings. Those buildings place less demand for more electricity, but there still is demand for electricity, just not as much as there would have been otherwise. And so what we're seeing is a measure against demand today versus kind of moving that bar out every year.
Right. And you're suggesting not taking into account the growth?
Madam Chair, I'm saying that it's fine to take into account the growth, so we're measuring against, you know, because the goals that we're trying to reach are goals.
I didn't
goals.
Mean that we shouldn't. Is your question of Deputy Commissioner that... that these don't reflect that growth.
No, I think they do reflect the growth, and that's why the numbers look smaller in the out years.
Right.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner.
Today, too, yeah.
Got a note. What does this note say? I don't know. Madam Chairman.
Do you know what the question is?
Whether Senator Dibble is right or not?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as far as I'm concerned, Senator Dibble is always right.
So I figured out a simpler
Senator
way
Dibble.
To say it. We aren't going to be using less electricity in the future. than we do today, but we'll be using far less than we would have been otherwise, and I think that's what these numbers reflect.
Does that then take into consideration we want to be below 2005 levels?
Madam Chair, I think the goal is to I think the magic there then is the sources of electricity generation.
So it's not a reduction in energy, but a reduction in the carbon emissions.
Well, both combined. I mean, a reduction in what we would. I mean, there is a reduction in the sense that we're going to be using less electricity than we would have otherwise. So that's a reduction. Even though there's this growth, it's a much, much slower growth. So that reduces carbon.
Sure.
And then hopefully where we generate that electricity or how we generate that electricity contributes to even less CO2.
You're talking about the efficiency part of it.
Efficiency combined with renewables and sequestration or whatever.
Sure.
Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner.
Another way to sort of look at this is, and this is in the RCI, this is in the report to the MCAG for the January 24th, and this actually ties to the note that I was helpfully given to sort of remind, is RCI 1, current energy efficiency, meeting the 1.5% of the demand efficiency goal, is the first line in bold. It gets you 6 million metric tons in 2015, 220 in 2025, 14. Far and away one of the biggest numbers.
I don't think we have that slide, do we?
No, you don't have that slide. This is off the website. I just wanted to sort of explain that. But that's not in that chart that you were looking at, because that is an existing action. And that chart is for the other subsequent actions. Did that help at all? All right. Well,
it looks like the end of the questions for right
well,
now.
Well, Madam Chair, sorry. I just have one other question.
Senator Anderson.
And that relates to the cost, because I just wanted to, you know, on the chart that you have with the cumulative results, just I was at the last couple of MCAG meetings, and there was a change in the price that was allocated to the renewable energy standard, because at first it was seen as a net savings of, I forget, a lot of money, like over $1 billion or something. It was huge. That it was the assumption that was put into this equation was that the RES would save a lot of money. And then suddenly on the last day, the assumptions changed, and it was designated as a money coster rather than a money saver. And so that has to have an impact on the overall outcome of this being a positive number instead of a savings number. Can you tell me why somebody decided the RES cost money instead of saving money?
Madam Chairman, Senator Anderson, members of the committee, that was an issue that was brought up at the end of the last meeting of the advisory group. On the January 24th, where that question was explicitly sort of asked, these cost numbers, particularly for that one, because it did swing from positive to negative over, you know, with sets of calculations, and the question was why. The technical work group for energy supply decided to reconvene the following week to work through and get a better understanding of what those numbers were and how those assumptions were made. I did not attend that meeting, so I can't answer that quick question explicitly. It's one of the reasons why actually these numbers themselves are still not being finalized, because CCS has not done the final runs with all those assumptions. But the overarching point of that of this issue is so much of this is determined by the underlying assumptions that are being made: energy use, vehicle miles traveled, costs, et cetera.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Garvey, and I'm pounding this into the ground now, because I thought I understood this and maybe not now. But these numbers do not include the RES numbers, correct? These are above and beyond the RES numbers, or do these include the RES numbers?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chairman, Senator Cook, I do not believe they include the RES numbers. But I also do not believe that they're final. Actually, I know they're not final because they have not been completely analyzed and run with all the change of the assumptions.
Thank you.
Those numbers will come out, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the second draft.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Garvey, is CCS the only one that's going to be running these numbers, or is there going to be other numbers run by another?
Pull your microphone to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear the question?
I did, Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, members of the committee, CCS is the honest broker facilitator of this program. They're the ones that are running the numbers. Having said that, all their numbers and all their spreadsheets are being posted on the website for other people to test and analyze themselves if they so wish. But for our purposes, they're the ones that are running the numbers. Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner.
The next slide shows the array of options that the advisory group considered and ranked them by greenhouse gas reduction potential in the year 2025. So this is the one, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that you start sort of saying, all right, where do you get the biggest carbon savings? What are those options? And you see that. And you see I've listed on the bottom of this chart that the number one largest proposed savings that comes from AFW 5 forest management. The second is biofuels, AFW 3. And the third is waste management. And so when we look at that, and this is an important, in my opinion, observation and conclusion coming out of the group from my perspective, is that did sort of identify where some of the next sets of efforts should go once and as we move beyond implementing the demand efficiency and the renewable energy standard and those kinds of things. Each category. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this chart tries to place the same set of options on a cost per ton basis. And you see here that there are some proposals that have large costs, and there's some that have negative costs or savings.
Can you give us a little more detail on that? And how does that relate to the decisions that were made here?
Madam Chair, these slides in particular have not been seen. I mean, you, except for people who have been basically reviewed those that are being posted, these are the first time these slides have been shown. And they'll be in the executive summary, and they're in the materials that are coming out. But what they sort of show is the analysis of, you know, how much you get for each of the options when you start looking at it. And if you believe that you should be going, if you should develop strategies or emphasizing the largest activities that can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, this chart will point you in the right direction. This chart will tell you which of those activities or which of those options also have the cost or cost savings components to them. And you put those two together and you start thinking about where you want to go and how you want to proceed.
Pretty low. So do you know what RCI 2 is or RCI 10?
Yes. Madam Chair, RCI 2 is improve uniform statewide building codes. It has the in this chart. It has one of the it's one of the largest cost savings. But when you look at it over here, you see RCI 2 is the fourth one in from the right. It doesn't have a large calculated greenhouse gas reduction element to it.
Madam Chair.
Just a minute. So what you're saying is it saves the most money, but it doesn't reduce the greenhouse gases that very much.
Madam Chairman, what I'm sort of saying is implementing it would have the most amount of per carbon savings of the options that considered, and you see that, but that the actual carbon saved is a relatively small number. In fact, you know, in the January 24th, it was basically 0.005 million metric tons of carbon equivalents in 2025, a very small number.
Okay, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, since I didn't get a chance to, you know, look at maybe the details, and some of the, I don't really, if I could get a little description on what forestry management, with some of the things that entails, so I'd get, and I can get my hands around what that is, some of the practices we'd be talking about or that achieve these savings.
Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner.
Senator Dahl, members of the committee. I'm just a simple utility regulator. The forestry management issues are, the experts in that are those that were on the technical working group. And we're staffed by the Department of Agriculture and the DNR and the groups that were involved in that. They're the ones in reading the materials would be the best to give you that kind of information. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, there's reforestation kinds of questions. There's expanding and promoting urban forestry and planting of trees kinds of questions. Wildfire reduction and management of the forest so that when the forests do burn, they burn in a way that basically regenerates growth, et cetera. The restocking of forests and those kinds of questions.
Maybe I can interrupt you a minute. If committee members refer to this handout,
okay.
It shows the definition for each of those categories in the first column here.
Thank you.
And Madam
thank
Chair.
You.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I was going to elaborate on what you said, which is I think it's important to look at the details of what's on this sheet because the details really matter because, I mean, when the MCAG – They put hundreds of hours into sort of trying to, and the assumptions do make a difference on obviously on what you come out with. But they have numerical goals here, like for example, you know, make sure that 80% of the thermal heat used in ethanol facilities comes from renewable sources by 2015. On AFW-5, increase permanent forest land by 1 million acres by planting trees, et cetera. I mean, these are very specific, but the numbers, the greenhouse gas savings are directly correlated to those numbers. And so I think if you don't use those numbers, if you say, well, we're going to add a few forests here and there, then you're not going to reach those savings. So it's important to look at exactly what they arrived at because they tried to do this in a mathematical way to say, you know, this is how much it would take to reach this much savings. And so I think this is really helpful to have. And it's also on the website. I mean, this is where this is taken from, directly from the MCAG report, you know, documents.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my final slide is next steps. There are several next steps that we're proposing. First one is the completion of the MCAG process, which I've already sort of identified will be happening in the next couple months. The most important step, in my opinion, is making sure we implement the existing actions that we have underway. Third, work to get regional and national efforts going. We are working within the context of the Midwest Governors Association, the National Governors Association, and our congressional delegations, of course, on both of those. Fourth, as we've already sort of gently identified, there are some areas that the MCAG analysis or points us as to the next set of areas to pursue. And those are, as we sort of touch base, is the enhanced forestry, expand the biofuels, better waste management. If I may, Madam Chair, that is one of the reasons why when you look at the plan that we submitted on February 1st, the agriculture, forestry, and waste items are taking up a majority of the items that we propose, because those are the areas that we think we should place our greatest emphasis in the near term, with the understanding that this, of course, is a preliminary plan, but we did identify at least that as an area that we do think that we should be spending some of our current thinking and attention on, but we not at the expense of existing actions. And finally, that as we do take our actions to aggressively reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to reduce in a way that achieves the greenhouse gas reduction goals. We do it thoughtfully, incrementally, deliberatively, so that we, at the end of the day, make sure that we not only address the goals, but are better off as a state and that our peoples and our communities are economically vibrant as a result. Madam Chair, that sort of concludes my presentation.
But Deputy Commissioner, wouldn't it be helpful for you to walk us through that preliminary report so you can point out how we're actually going to reduce, or we're going to meet our goals?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I could certainly discuss the components of the plan itself. But this plan is designed to be preliminary in nature. It's designed to be a living plan. It's designed to be a plan that was filed on February 1st to meet the law, to be consistent with and be part of the discussion, not a replacement of or an alternative of the advisory group's effort itself. But it was an effort to basically sort of say, that as we look at this issue, as we looked at it then, here's where we want it to go, and here's the steps we think we should take. So I can walk through that, but I mean I think it's important and walk through as much as I can the components of. But I mean I wanted to make sure that the plan itself, and I'm confident that we implement everything in that, working with the components that we want to from the MCAG, we will achieve our goals, and this will achieve the goals. But I don't want to sort of put it in a context that this is sort of seen to be sort of the beginning and the end all. It's the start of the discussion. It was preliminary in nature. The MCAG and its analysis is vital to our discussion and our thinking.
So do you anticipate there will be another report?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm of the opinion that this is going to be an issue that we can and should be working on and reporting on and thinking about in a lot of different contexts. And so that at the report, the MCAG report itself will be finalized in April. I think we'll have to basically work as policymakers and leaders and administrators and people of the state to address our carbon. And we take measures and actions that we always think appropriate to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
Questions or comments? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Commissioner, I'm just looking at one of these things. We're going to do some one of the recommendations, formal greenhouse gas inventory forecasting and reporting functions. And I think we're all agreeing that this is an issue we need to to address in a pretty aggressive way. And then looking at that, there's going to be some changes in our climate, possibly, that we have to deal with things with our infrastructure, maybe with our wastewater treatments, plants, things like that. Is there any contingency plans being developed or looked at, much like if we were to train for emergency responses, flu epidemics, anything like that? Or is the state or any departments looking at or developing plans to look at what, you know, what we may have to be looking at or facing or preparing for should the temperature rise another degree in the next 15 years or we change our weather patterns? Is any of that being done?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, members of the committee. Let me answer in three different levels, if I may. First off, I mean, there is a line of thinking that climate change is occurring and that we ought to start going towards mitigation and amelioration and adaptation kinds of things. There are those kinds of thoughts. Whether they've been put in kind of the specific planning mode, I haven't been part of those kinds of discussions. Second, I will also sort of say, as a person who's basically going through the National Incident Management System to be able to handle crisis settings, I think that all of the leaders in the state are starting to go through. We're being prepared for the crisis, whether those crises are related to climate change or some other kinds of actions. We're preparing for those. The third way to answer that is that our first effort is to start reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, working at the regional, at the national level, understanding that Minnesota by itself didn't cause this problem and can't solve this problem, and it's global in nature, and we need to get everyone on board and moving forward on it so that you don't have to start playing out the doomsday scenarios.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still not totally clear here. If this is your preliminary plan, when the MCAG report is final, will you come up with a final plan based on the MCAG recommendations? And are you going to have a plan that actually quantifies greenhouse gas reductions for each measure that you're recommending?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, members of the committee, my expectation is that this committee, other committees of the legislature, the people of Minnesota will want to know what we're doing on climate change and how we're going to be addressing the goals, and that we will have to be in candidly, I think that in a global sense, not only my department, the administration, but all of us involved in this issue will having to be sort of doing a collective sort of reporting of this. You're asking a more specific question: is will there be another document that specifically said the formal climate change action plan with the numerical analysis? That's a question that we're actually trying that I've been actually sort of thinking about and trying to wonder. And it goes back to the question that Senator Rosen asked: was that if you change an assumption or change an act or implement an act a different way, even minor, may change the numbers that the advisory group has and the CCS has done for that particular one. And so the question is, does every change in iteration result in a new recalculation? So the answer is we're probably not going to want to do that. The final part is, and this is where moving into the registration and calculations and inventorying of our greenhouse gas emissions will ultimately become the method for tracking our success.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I still don't.
Senator Anderson.
I don't see. I mean, the MCAG very specifically gave us a list of things that, you know, one combination, one menu of possible ways to reach those greenhouse goals that Senator Prentner-Solin passed into her bill last year that we all voted for. You told us last night at the Minnesota, the MEP, you said that bill passed with fewer no votes than the Honeycrisp apple bill, and I really liked what you said about that. There was a big consensus about the bills that we passed. So we have some very strong goals in place. We have MCAG recommendations that very specifically tell us how we can get there, but I'm trying to connect that to what you're proposing we do. And maybe we should just take the MCAG recommendations and try to pass those into law. But is that what you're in? Would you endorse that? I guess I don't, I'm not quite sure what we should do with your plan, because it doesn't, I mean, if we should wait for a more detailed version, or if we should, I guess I'm really not clear what you're, what you think we should do.
Deputy Commissioner.
Or just wait for, just track how we're doing in the future. But I don't think that's, you know, that's not proactive enough. That won't get us to our goals to sort of look backwards. We need to look forwards and say, what do we have to do for, to get from now to then?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, members of the committee. The climate change threat from anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions poses a significant threat to us. Addressing that, reducing those emissions, is going to require a transformation in how we make and use energy. That transformation is very significant, and it should not be underestimated. That transformation cannot be done, should not be done abruptly. It has to be done iteratively. The way we're looking at this plan is we need to implement the existing actions, because we know we cannot achieve our goals if we do not do that well. The other portion of the plan.
So when you talk about the existing actions, you're talking about the bills that were passed last year, the renewable energy and the conservation and efficiency bills.
Implementing and getting our utilities to the 1.5%.
Okay.
Achieving the renewable energy standard, achieving the biofuel standard, implementing and making sure that MRP gets done, which I think is sort of, not that I'm throwing in a question, but it's one of the big things that's done. I mean, that was done in the 2003 session. Xcel is implementing. I mean, those things take time. So my message to this committee and to all of us is that we do what we are doing and make sure we get that right, because we're on the right track. The MCAG has identified the next set of issues for us to tackle. We start figuring out ways to do that. I've put out some proposals on that, as has the MCAG, and we start paying attention to that, not necessarily to the expense of anything and at all everything else, but that's sort of the message.
Senator Rosen.
No, that's fine.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I'm still not clear on what the administration's proposal is. What I mean, and I don't want to ask it, I guess I've already asked it twice, so I don't want to repeat myself, but I just want to say I'm not clear on what you think we should do. Specifically,
I believe
this year,
what I heard,
if anything,
was that the proposal was put out because of the requirement by the legislation we passed, and that it's a preliminary report to meet the requirement of the bill, and that we have to take into consideration the final report as we move forward.
Madam Chair, I heard that, absolutely. But that would be too late for any legislative action this session.
If we wait
for that before we take action. So, I mean, obviously there are a lot of bills and legislators intend to take action in a lot of fronts, but I'm just...
By the same token, there are a lot of tools, I believe, on the website by which to gauge what our economies will be as we propose legislation.
Yes, that's true. So we can use the MCAG process to help inform our discussion on bills. I think a lot of the bills will be similar to MCAG recommendations. I'm just trying to sort of figure out what the administration's role will be during this legislative session on these discussions.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner, do you want to add anything?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, The Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group has done an extraordinary amount of work and has done and done us an extraordinary service in that work, and produced a and is in the process of producing a very, very valuable document. It's a touchstone that all of us can and should sort of, you know, familiarize ourselves with and look to as we think about what to do and how to do it. At the same time, I want to emphasize how important it is to make sure we do the things that we already are doing well and not distract ourselves from achieving those goals. That, in many respects, is one of my bigger concerns, is that we move on and we we take our eye off the demand efficiency and the renewable energy ball or the biofuels ball, and we don't get the rewards and the opportunities, both economically and greenhouse gas emission reductions, from it.
Madam Chair, can I ask one more question, if I may? You list three areas under next areas of reductions, that the three AFW categories here, and I just want to ask if you're supporting those as described by the MCAG, because they're very specific and have very specific measurable outcomes, or just in concept?
Deputy Commissioner.
You know, plant more trees or have a million more acres trees. I mean, is it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Anderson, the report that I filed, let's see, we have a number of, at the time, on pages, starting on page 3, 4, and going on to, just stopping there, we sort of talk about the things that we think we can and we should do from an administration point of view and from the agencies that are intimately involved in those issues. And those are the kinds of things. I think to a large extent they align very closely, in fact, if not specifically with MCAG, but they may not be 100% on a specific line item. I'd have to look more carefully specifically on that.
Okay. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've heard the answer. I mean, I think this line of questioning started with asking Deputy Commissioner to present the plan that was submitted to the legislature on February 1st, and he demurred, articulating that it was a preliminary plan, not the final plan, as called for in statute, as preliminary, and so it's going to take more work and more refinement, and so there will be a further work. And then the next question was asked, okay, well, then will there be a final plan? And I think the Deputy Commissioner demurred once again and said, well, no, it'll be an ongoing iterative process. And so then I think the question was pressed, and I think the answer we've gotten is that, well, you know, we don't really want to make any definitive statements in time to enact any policy changes that might be called for in the report as compiled by MCAG. So I think we have our answer, and then so the question then becomes, it comes back to the legislature. Are there things we should and can be pursuing, policies we could and shall be pursuing this year that help us take some steps that will allow us to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions from other sectors? I think the administration is saying, no, let's not do anything this year. I think others are saying, there are some good recommendations here, some steps we can take that aren't going to stress the economy and stress the ability of our state to rise to some challenges. In particular, you know, if I may say, I think there are some interesting recommendations that seem to be somewhat watered down by the preliminary report, but some stuff that we can look at that look to and call upon other sectors. And that was a source of a great deal of the debate we had last year. Why are we doing, asking the utilities to go to all this effort? We're not looking to the transportation sector. You know, why are we asking utilities to do everything? We're not looking to the ag sector or the building sector and that sort of thing. And You know, and so I don't think we're going to get much further here with the current testifier with Commissioner Garvey, but I am interested in hearing some more of these ideas that are coming out of MCAG in some ways that we could perhaps proceed.
Well, we do have other testifiers, too, and we will hear from them as soon as the senators have completed their questions and comments. So Senator Dahl and then Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to concur with Senator Dibble. It seems as though we got a lot of things done last year because of the support of the governor, and he got behind it and put his resources and his thoughts behind it. But now with this MCAG report or preliminary report out, it seems like we're going to take a couple of steps back. At least that's what I'm hearing from the commissioner. We'll do a thoughtful, incremental, deliberative actions, as you're stating there, and that this year will be a year to kind of think about where we want to go. And yet, as you've said, that there's some pressing issues here. And without the support of the administration, it's going to be hard to really do something significant again. And I don't know that we want to. I mean, we're not going to take our eye off the ball, but if we decide that we're going to change our game plan and instead of passing the ball, we're just going to go to a running attack and punt, we get nowhere. We get and right now at a time when we need to keep pressing forward, there must be some things that we can do that the administration thinks or, you know, the governor thinks is worthwhile this year that you know allows us to have some chance to think about some of these things more deeply, but also things that we know we can pursue in the short term this session, knowing especially that it's a short session and we do need to get some things done. Are there some things that are on that short list?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Dahl, there are a couple items that we proposed that would require legislative action. The concept of renewable energy zones and corridors, the elimination of the certificate of need for resources that would be used to comply with the renewable energy standard. The governor will be proposing a microenergy initiative so that you can help citizens and small businesses put solar or wind or geothermal kinds of resources to help them reduce their energy uses. There are some kinds of things that some algal kinds of biological resources that are coming out of wastewater that they could be converted to and be used for energy if they were treated and deemed to be renewable. Also, we've also suggested that maybe there's a it's now the time to repeal the moratorium on nuclear facilities. So I want to also sort of say that it is not all correct that there aren't things that we're proposing that the legislature may and probably should consider. But let me also sort of say that this is not a message of no action. This is a message of we've already passed an extraordinary nation-leading set of actions. We passed them less than 12 months ago. My staff, my department, the other agencies that are tasked with implementing them, the utilities, the stakeholders, are gearing up to implement those. That action is extraordinarily important to be done and done right. And what we're trying to sort of say is that's where we should be paying our attention to. Now, are there some things that the legislature should do and we want to encourage you? Yeah, I just identified some.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your last comments were very good. Commissioner, I think we all need to sit back around this table. We all need to take a deep breath and actually, instead of looking at what we haven't accomplished, look at what we have accomplished. Perhaps we didn't celebrate enough of what we accomplished last year. And I'll be honest, there were some people that voted for that bill that weren't very comfortable with that bill. So we all need to sit back, take a deep breath, and say, okay, Minnesota is leading the nation, and we did a tremendous job with that. And how many years did it take to get up to last year's vote? The best thing that we ever did was to get this advisory group together. And they've worked all year long to get this recommendation. And we want to move forward right now with everything that they recommend. And I absolutely think that we are pushing a little bit too hard. This is a bonding year. Monumental legislation takes a little bit more thoughtful time. For many of us, it's the first time we've seen these recommendations. We need a little time to assimilate it and talk and have these conversations and get comfortable with what we're going down the path. As the commissioner said, well, there are some things that we can do, but if we're not hearing exactly what we want to do right now, we're all upset instead of saying, you know what, we did pretty good last year. Perhaps we should keep that in mind. We did really, really good.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to debate my good friend Senator Rosen, because I appreciate what you said, and I appreciate that it was a leap of faith for a lot of people to vote for those really strong bills that we passed last year. But I also feel, number one, that all of the, you know, the governor did show a lot of leadership to get us where we are, and I don't say that very often, and so that means something, I think, that this advisory group worked so hard to figure out what the next steps are, and I think it would be really a shame to kind of let that sit and not take advantage of it. But I guess beyond that, I feel just a tremendous sense of urgency that we can't afford to wait, and, you know, because we're not, you know, as legislators, we have, out of the whole year, we have 1 month that we can pass bills, really. So we're on a deadline here, and we have to wait another year before we can do any more as legislators in terms of setting policies in place. And I think everything that I hear from all the scientists around the world is that time is running out and we have to act. And, you know, we set these goals that establish, I think, that Minnesota understands that we appreciate the seriousness of the job we have ahead of us, and those goals that we've established they're going to be really hard to meet, but it's going to take a lot more than the laws we've already passed. As good as they are, we have to do a lot more to really reach those goals. So if we're serious about a 15% reduction in the next 7 years, I guess I'd be interested to, you know, I just want to try to focus on the numbers, and it would be, maybe we should look at a plan for how, you know, how we're going to get from here, from 2008 to 2015. What kind of reductions we need to add on to what we've already done, and, you know, what should we start with? You know, we can't do it all in 1 year. I fully appreciate that, but we also can't afford to wait a year while we think about it. So, you know, maybe we should figure out, take these chunks and break them down into manageable pieces and have a year-by-year strategy. So we have a 5-year plan of what we're going to try to accomplish. But we just can't afford to wait. I mean, the scientists say if we don't take action, well, some say 10 years, some say 2 to 3 years. If we don't take dramatic action, then we won't be able to turn around the concentration of CO2 in our atmosphere. So I just feel a sense of urgency, and I think that's all that is behind our comments.
I appreciate your comments, Senator Anderson, and I think it would be wise for us to develop a plan and the principles by which we would make decisions regarding that plan so that we can achieve the goals that we set out in last year's bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator
and
Rosen.
Perhaps the commissioner and his department can come up with what they are comfortable with implementing right away, a list of what is doable, what's feasible right now.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I think your suggestion is a great one. And I was glad that Commissioner Garvey shared these 5 ideas that he did. That was great. Really glad to hear that. And I think I'm not asking, and I don't think anyone else is asking, for us to live our lives in a day, and or asking to stress the resources of the state beyond which make any sense. And in fact, I think the opposite is true. I think those of us who are working on these energy issues really hope that create a vibrant economy that, instead of costing a ton of money, we create new sources of wealth and new success, new opportunities for success for folks. So, but I also believe at the same time, it's important to honor the hard work of the MCAG, take their recommendations to heart, figure out a strategy, a multi-year plan of rolling out. And frankly, we did a lot, and we called upon a particular part of the state to do a lot, but not everyone is a part of that. There are vast sectors, vast swaths, vast interests in the state that we've really left alone. And I don't think it's too much to start looking at and engaging with them and asking for more and higher contributions, for example, the transportation sector from local units of government. I've got a proposal there, how we organize our land use functions, that sort of thing. That's not beyond our ability to take some strides this year, and I don't think it would, create the critical mass that would create a collapse. I think it would create the momentum, continue to build on what we need to build on. We said last year when we passed the bill, the hard work starts this year.
I agree with you, and that was a key point of the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007, is that it would be a multi-sector solution, and so I'd like to engage those other sectors in the solution, too. Before we go on, and I think we probably have many discussions that we'll want to hold in the next few weeks, I would like to hear from the testifiers that are here. I don't want to go on too long before we do. And so thank you, Deputy Commissioner. And I'd like to call at this time on Bill Grant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
5:30, yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Grant for the Isaac Walton League, and also representing Clean Energy Minnesota. And shortly you'll be hearing from two other members of that joined me on the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. And we wanted to respond to the governor's preliminary report. That's what was in front of us. As of today, we haven't had a chance yet to review what's on the website as of today. So our comments will go to this report, and we have a number of concerns with it. The report really doesn't include all of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group's recommendations. Others have been watered down considerably, treating them as goals rather than requirements, as the MK group had endorsed them. The implementation strategies and policies appear to have been somewhat cherry-picked to reflect the governor's priorities rather than the priorities that had been laid out by the group. Greenhouse gas reduction estimates were not included in this report, making it very difficult for you and others, I think, to know if the recommended actions taken together will achieve the goals that you laid out in the Next Generation Energy Act last year. This last point, I think, is especially important concerning the charge that you gave to the MCAG last year. The Center for Climate Strategies, which was the consulting group that managed the process and did the analysis, showed us during the process that it would require adoption of every action that was considered by the MCAG to achieve our goal. That includes a number of things that did not get approved at the MCAG level. So comparing that to the chart that Deputy Commissioner Garvey showed you a little bit earlier that showed those overlapping lines, if all of the policies that the group did enact were, in fact, approved and went forward, is a little bit difficult for me to believe. In fact, the fact that they completely overlap seems completely improbable, and I don't know how to take that at this point until we've had a chance to evaluate the new numbers. The other thing that's important about that is that as the MCAG evaluated those strategies, they all assumed that we were going to begin implementing them more or less immediately in order to achieve the interim targets. In other words, the 15% by 2015, the 30% by 2025, and so forth. So to hear today that the governor's commitment is only to begin chipping away at a few of this, frankly, less ambitious policies that were recommended, really ignores the fact that in order to get to those 2015 goals and beyond, we really do need to implement everything almost simultaneously. Now, I think we all recognize that that is not likely. It's certainly not possible given the short session that's in front of us. But I am concerned. I think the rest of us on the committee that you're going to hear from this afternoon are concerned that this preliminary report, in any case, seems to give really short shrift to the work that the Climate Change Advisory Group actually did. I'm going to review for you in a little bit more detail the discrepancies, I guess I'd say, between Governor or Representative Garverdy, or Deputy Commissioner Garverdy's report and the actual MCAG recommendations in three different categories: the ag, forestry, and waste category, the residential, commercial, industrial category, and then the cross-cutting issues. And then you'll be hearing from two other witnesses about the other three technical working group recommendations and the status of those. To start with the ag, forestry, and waste, and as Deputy Commissioner Garvey pointed out, there were some recommendations. There were some large CO2 savings associated with them, but there are a number of recommendations in that category that were not included in his preliminary report. For example, there was no mention of a recommendation for research and development to measure various soil carbon management practices, work that was recommended to be done by the University of Minnesota. Without that kind of work, we really aren't going to know whether or not some of the practices that have been recommended are going to achieve the targets that were estimated for them when the Climate Change Advisory Group was doing its work. There was no mention of a recommendation that bioenergy policies be coupled with near-term funding for development of feedstock sustainability standards. In other words, as we're improving the health of the forest by perhaps removing some forest residue, using energy crops, ag residues, and so forth, we want to make sure that we're doing it in a sustainable manner, that we're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak, in our efforts to get CO2 reductions. And this is an important recommendation that was not included in the preliminary action plan. As I mentioned before, the action plan really seems to downplay the level of stringency with which the MCAG actually endorsed some of the recommendations. For example, the language in this plan speaks of maintaining and supporting wetland and peatland carbon sinks, when the MCAG endorsed expanding these efforts considerably to improve soil carbon content and sequestration of greenhouse gases. And, you know, the peatland one is particularly important. Minnesota, of the lower 48 states, has the largest acreage of peatlands of any other state. And those peatlands contain vast quantities of stored carbon. If we allow those peatlands to dry up or otherwise decay, enormous amounts of CO2 get released to the atmosphere. And maintaining and supporting is not language that the MCAG endorsed, nor is it really going to get us where we need to be in terms of protecting those very valuable resources. Interestingly, the report adds two recommendations that were never considered by the MCAG. One, to expand biodiesel from B2 to B20, maybe a good idea, never considered by the MCAG. It defines wastewater sludge as biomass and as a renewable fuel, was considered by the MCAG and rejected. Yet it's been included in the preliminary action plan as if the MCAG had in fact endorsed it. On waste measures, the MCAG recommended more aggressive recycling goal of 60% by 2025 and 15% composting by 2020. This is not included in Deputy Commissioner Garvey's plan. Also not included were more triggers for aggressive implementation mechanisms for recycling and composting if some of the interim goals for those actions aren't met. So, again, and there are a lot of things that the Ag, Forestry, and Waste Committee considered. Our concern is that the governor's report gives them all rather short shrift. Turning to residential, commercial, and industrial sector, there was no mention in the action plan of a recommendation that was endorsed by the group to study moving beyond the 1.5% conservation improvement program goal that you all endorsed in the Next Generation Act last year to go to 2%. It is a very aggressive goal. We understand that 1.5% is an aggressive goal. Our view is that it's, and I think the view of the MCAG was that it's going to take 1.5% and more from energy efficiency measures to address the climate problem. Again, that recommendation to study what it would take to get to 2% at the state level was not included. The Next Generation Energy Bill that you passed last year also considered more than just reductions of CO2 as a greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide. It also listed six other greenhouse gases that would need to be reduced or have the potential to be reduced. And these are, for the most part, very high-intensity greenhouse gases, gases like methane that have 21 times the greenhouse gas potential of CO2. There was a recommendation in the MCAG report that we develop strategies for reducing those other greenhouse gases. That recommendation was not included in this plan. And finally, on cross-cutting issues, there was no mention of the recommendation by the MCAG to create Deputy Commissioner Garvey's new office, the Office of Energy Security, and yet it was included in the plan here as a recommendation of the group. I don't have a problem with that, but just to be clear, that was not something that the MCAG had recommended. And there was no mention in the governor's report of a recommendation to create a greenhouse gas education program with participation by the government sector, industry, and nonprofits. We think that this problem is going to require education at a massive scale amongst all members of the public in Minnesota. And there was a recommendation within the MCAG's report to create such an educational effort, again, not included in the governor's plan. There's been some discussion, just to wrap up my testimony, Madam Chair, about how quickly we need to move. And I think that this committee is certainly persuaded, as we are, that the scope of the problem, the pace of the problem, requires really a transformative change at all levels of government, at all levels of industry, amongst all members of the public. And the recommendations of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group were really targeted in that direction to achieve the goals that you laid out in the Next Generation Energy Act last year. Those are the goals that we think, the kind of disruptive goals that are going to be uncomfortable, but at the same time necessary in order to achieve climate stabilization and really continued life on the planet. We're disappointed in some that the governor's plan doesn't seem to put us on the trajectory to get there. So with that, Madam Chair, I would take any questions, or you could call your next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Are there questions or comments by the committee members? Okay. Thank you very much. Barbara Fries.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to speak to you today about what has been submitted by the governor and how it compares to the work done by the MCAG. I should say that I was a member of two of the technical working groups, which are known as TWIGs. So if you hear me mention TWIG, that's what I'm talking about. It's our subcommittees, the energy supply one and the cap and trade one. Before getting into some of the differences between the governor's submittal and the MNCAG report on that, let me just reiterate and perhaps just echo something that you heard from Bill Grant regarding the quantification here. Obviously, we in the law that you passed last year, Minnesota adopted quantified goals, and a emphasis in the law requiring a plan to be submitted was that the plan achieve those goals. And as you saw in the slide that Deputy Commissioner Garvey showed earlier, right now the MNCAG plan only exactly achieves those goals. That is to say, there is no margin of error.
Ms. Fries,
yes,
I hate to interrupt you, but I don't think you've identified yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm
if
very
you would,
sorry.
Please.
My name is Barbara Fries, F-R-E-E-S-E, and I represented the Union of Concerned Scientists in on the MNCAG process. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So as you can see, the green and black lines there are overlapping so closely that there really is no margin of error. And I want to stress that this is what would be achieved by the MNCAG report. What would be achieved by the list of options set forth in the February 1st submittal would not be this, because it doesn't include all of those provisions. And so just to, again, stress that when it comes to the requirements of the statute that you were asked to have before you as of February 1st, a plan to achieve these targets, well, that I don't think we can say that the governor's plan achieves them, simply because things have been left out. And so actually what I'd like to do, because the energy supply one is relatively small, if I could just direct you to what was submitted on the February 1st, starting on page 1 of the document entitled Preliminary Climate Change Action Plan. This is the administration's submittal. And this is an attachment to this is the preliminary plan. And down on page 1, towards the bottom of it, it says energy supply implementation items. And there are a few bullets. The first is implementing the RES. Yes, of course, we agree that must be done. That is very important. But as we also see from these charts, it is not sufficient. The second bullet, repealing the state's moratorium on new nuclear energy facilities. I do want to address that one specifically. There was no discussion at all in the energy supply twig or the MNCAG of actually repealing that existing moratorium. And frankly, I don't think there would have been very much support for it. And so it is troubling to see this on the list and know that there is the implication. And I think some of the media inferred this, that this was the MNCAG's recommendation. This was not the MNCAG's recommendation. We did look at the possibility of building new nuclear plants. I think it is safe to say that within the energy supply twig, which included a lot of representatives from the power sector and other aspects or other sectors of our economy, there was relatively little enthusiasm for trying to get a new nuclear plant built. There was a lot of skepticism that we could accurately project the cost of such a plant, though our estimates did suggest it would be quite expensive. And it was the judgment of this group that a plant would not be built and would not be able to contribute to emission reductions until 2025, which was really after our planning period. So we did not recommend, and the MNCAG did not endorse, building a new plant or certainly lifting this moratorium. And the reductions you see here in no way depend on nuclear power. On the other hand, we did not want to take it completely off the table for after 2025, and so what we actually passed was a brief statement, and I have to say I haven't seen it in writing yet, and I have not had a chance to look at what's been posted today, but a brief statement to the effect that we should consider whether we could build a plant that would operate after 2025 if cost and risk issues are resolved. Then the next three bullets here, the one at the very bottom of the page and the next two ones, one is to reduce regulatory barriers and remove from certificate of need requirements certain renewable energy projects, and creating zones and corridors is the next bullet, and developing a sort of formal roadmap for clean energy technologies. These are all possibly very good ideas, I can't say, but they were not our ideas. We have not considered these. I kind of wish we had. They sound interesting, but I don't want to leave the impression that this is something that we vetted and endorsed and provided some detail on, because we did not. What we did go through in some detail were other options that were passed, in some cases by, I think, unanimous votes of the MNCAG that are not on this list, and for those who may be looking at the website, those are ES3, which related to improving the efficiency of existing power plants and using biomass in some of our coal plants. ES4, which related to upgrading transmission and particularly natural gas transmission, where leakage is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. And ES12, which related to providing incentives for distributed renewables. And there was also an ES8. We did not, as a committee, pass the formal ES8 proposal, which had established fairly expensive demonstration projects for carbon capture and storage. But we did pass a general endorsement to study carbon capture and storage, and particularly its use with biomass. So those are the options that we did pass, and those are not included on this list. Now, I have to admit I remain quite confused about how much to read into that. I mean, my first assumption in seeing this was that the governor did not want to pursue those options and would not support those options. Having heard Deputy Commissioner Garvey and seen these charts, I'm not sure anymore if that's the right implication, but I will simply note that these are not on this document. And then if I could just move on to cap and trade and just make a couple of points regarding that. Those are set forth in starting on page 5. The first bullet is to create a carbon market planning authority within the Office of Energy Security. Again, possibly a good idea, but not one that we discussed or recommended. This document doesn't really convey the fact that the MNCAG did indeed vote to move forward with a cap and trade and did endorse the development of that market on the Midwestern MGA process level. So that's consistent, I think, with what this document is suggesting. We went a little bit beyond that and identified some of the sectors that it should cover, and indeed a very broad sectoral coverage is what the MNCAG has recommended. We recommended it covered all 6 greenhouse gases. We made some recommendations regarding cap stringency and a few other things. So those options are something that would be available online, a more detailed discussion of those sorts of options. So those are the points I wanted to make, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser. Are there questions or comments? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, more just a comment, and I appreciate Ms. Fraser pointing out that I think that this really excellent document that Sandra Boone prepared, it does do a sort of a comparison of what MCAG recommended and what Director Garvey suggests that are in comparable areas, but I don't think it mentions things that were omitted completely from the MCAG recommendations. Is that probably true, or are they in here? I don't know. I mean, you mentioned a number of things that weren't included at all, and so we may not have those in front of us. That's all I just wanted to point out. So there's a lot that we'd have to go to the website to see what a lot of the other MCAG recommendations were. And so that's something that, just for people's information, I just wanted to point that out, that there's a lot that's missing. And I wasn't even aware that some of these things were under the energy supply, that it looks like nothing in here came from MCAG except implementing the renewable energy standard.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I'm just reminded, I forgot to mention one, and that is ES1. It did not pass. This was the requirement to set up a performance standard that would apply to future coal plants. It did not pass in a form that would affect the two pending coal plant applications out there, but it did pass in a form to affect anything beyond that. And, again, that is not listed on this.
Madam Chair. Okay.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just would like to just clear the air a little bit. I'm listening to the presentation, and I feel a little bit of a conspiracy that that the governor's office and Deputy Commissioner Garvey has deliberately left some of these things out. I want to point out it says preliminary climate change action plan. If it said final climate change action plan, then we would have some issues, but this is preliminary February 1st, so let's just all keep that in mind.
Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, I guess this would be more of a comment on page 2 where they talk about transportation with encouraging Minnesota employers to develop programs like van pools and stuff. I was contacted by a constituent in my district who'd been van pooling in a state of Minnesota van, I guess, for 15 years, and they just cut the program out. And, you know, basically saying, you know, get your own van pool going. So it was just kind of struck me that as these recommendations are coming forward, we kind of are maybe not even following that example as a state, because they found it as a very reliable source of transportation for, I think she said she'd been doing it for 15 years and fairly long distance from the Capitol. And so it's ironic.
One of our future testifiers will talk about transportation issues.
Madam Chair,
Senator
I have to correct what I said, because I'm wrong about this document. It actually does include every MCAG category.
Yes.
And where there's not a comparable recommendation from Director Garvey, it's just blank. So I misspoke.
Okay.
Apologize for that.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Freeze.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Barb Toman. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate this opportunity to talk with you a little bit about the recommendations from the point of view of transportation.
I'm going to ask you to identify yourself for the record, too, please.
I'm Barb Thoman. I work for Transit for Livable Communities, and I was one of the 55 members of the MCAG, and I served on the Transportation and Land Use Working Group. In Minnesota, you may know that transportation contributes about 25% of the greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota, and it's been one of the fastest-growing sectors of emissions. And so to meet the state, the goals that were in state law, the 15%, the 30%, and the 80% by 2050, we were told that we needed to have an aggressive program and put forward an aggressive program. And we also kept in mind that what we wanted to do was to identify strategies that would enable the transportation sector to do its share, to actually have emissions in about the percentage in which those emissions are generated by that sector, so that we're not asking energy supply, commercial, residential, and the other sectors to take on more of the burden than they should. So we knew from other states that there are really three overarching strategies in the area of transportation for reducing emissions, and those are more efficient vehicles, less polluting vehicle fuels, and reducing miles driven. And we also understood that it was going to take actions in all three of those areas if we were going to meet the goals. So simply having more efficient vehicles, burning cleaner fuels was not going to be enough. We were going to have to figure out ways in which Minnesotans could choose to walk more, bike more, take transit more often, carpool more, make shorter trips, so that we could reduce vehicle miles traveled. So our working group developed a slate of recommendations for the full MCAG to consider All the strategies were adopted by a majority of the MCAG members, but several with only a simple majority rather than a supermajority or rather than having been adopted unanimously. And taken collectively, those reductions resulted in a reduction of 9 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. And if you also take into account the new CAFE standards that were passed by the federal government and signed by the president in December, transportation would, in essence, be doing its share. That would be about 25% of the emissions. So the preliminary climate change action plan that was released by the administration, and I do recognize that it's preliminary, and maybe some of the things that we had hoped would be in there will be in there in the final document, but it did not include many of the strategies adopted by the advisory group. And some of the strategies that it did include were weaker than what we had proposed. 5 of the 11 strategies were excluded outright, and other strategies were described as more voluntary efforts, or they were more suggestions rather than requirements or things that we had hoped would be adopted. So if you look at what was left out as compared to what the MCAG had proposed, transportation would be the emissions from the transportation sector would be about half of what was proposed or estimated by the MCAG process. So it should be noted that the governor made a couple of additional recommendations in the area of transportation and land use that were not in the MCAG report. He proposed a public information campaign, tolling of highway shoulders, and permitting trucks with higher weights. So under the area of reducing vehicle miles traveled and increasing this walking, biking, public transit, carpooling, about half the reductions in the transportation area come from this effort, from this reducing VMT. And the advisory committee endorsed the following strategies under that goal. Improved land use planning statewide, so more compact development, greater options for walking, biking, and transit use. And the only piece of that was included in the governor's recommendations was something related to school districts and school siting. And that recommendation is actually 20% of the total recommendations for transportation and land use. So it's very important. And so it was very disappointing to me to see that it had been left out. Expanding public transit, biking, and walking statewide, that was about implementing the Met Council's transit plan on the same schedule that had originally been proposed, so implementing it by 2020 as opposed by 2030, and then also greatly improving transit connections within greater Minnesota between from one regional center to another and then from regional centers into the Twin Cities. And the governor included that recommendation, but it appeared to be, from the reading of it, a much more modest proposal. Climate-friendly transportation pricing, including pay-as-you-drive insurance, which is a very interesting topic that I won't go into now, but that was included in the governor's recommendations. Fix-It-First, a transportation policy known as Fix-It-First, which a number of states have, which really prioritizes the maintenance of existing roads, bridges, pavements over the expansion of the system, was not included. Workplace tools to reduce driving alone, the governor included those. It was weaker than had been proposed by the MCAG. Freight mode shifts, intermodal and rail, so trying to, there's a dramatic increase in truck traffic that's being projected, and this would make it more likely that some of that truck traffic would be on freight rail. And that was included in the governor's recommendations. It actually was a strategy that we developed very late in the process, so it was one that we were not able to get any greenhouse gas emission reduction estimates for. So you'll see in the document when you finally get the big document that it's one that isn't listed as having GHG benefits per se. So the interesting thing, I think, about these VMT reduction strategies, and if you looked back at the document that Deputy Commissioner Garvey provided you on page 5, and I numbered it page 5, but it's the MCAG actions, the cumulative results, that chart on the bottom right here, these VMT reduction strategies actually have a net savings as opposed to a net cost. So they are very they are strategies that while they may cost government some amount of money, there will also be other governmental savings, and there will be significant savings for business and for households. And so they are strategies that, some communities or some regions around the country and some states have implemented even before the climate change concerns, because they just make sense, because they save money on infrastructure, for example. The other slate of strategies, the cleaner fuels, cleaner cars, we endorsed, the advisory committee endorsed a number of strategies in that regard. Adopting a low carbon fuel standard was one of those. This is similar to what California has done. The governor said we should encourage more E85 and study this, but not actually implement it as we had proposed. Infrastructure management, which are things like state-of-the-art parking, signal priority for buses and trains, complete streets, a number of things like that. Those were included in the governor's recommendations. Adopting the California Clean Car Standards, which California and 12 other states have done, did not receive a supermajority. Only a majority of the members voted for that option. It was not included in the governor's recommendations. It was about 10% of the total reductions that we had hoped to see. If the CAFE standards hadn't been adopted by Congress in December, then this would have been a much bigger number than it is now. Emission reductions from fleets, including trucks. We had a number of business representatives on the MCAG, and they worked very hard. One of them was a fleet manager and looked at all the different ways in which you could reduce emissions from fleets that are owned by hospitals and businesses and other institutions. For some reason, that was not included in the governor's recommendations, but I would bet that in the final report it will be. Finally, reduce maximum highway speed limits had only majority support, not a supermajority support within the group, and that was not included in the governor's preliminary recommendations. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosa.
Thank you. Ms. Tolman, did you mention there were several, the shoulder lane and the increased weight limit on trucks. Did the group look at those?
We did not, Madam Chair and Senator. We did not look at any of those. The public information campaign was really a part of cross-cutting issues, but the tolling of highway shoulder lanes and permitting trucks with higher weights was not something that we looked at. I think it's something that if there's still money available in the contract, we could ask CCS to look at. For us, I think the concern that I might have about tolling of highway shoulder lanes is, while that is a potentially a good congestion reduction strategy, it is not necessarily a strategy that would reduce vehicle miles traveled. So it might actually result in an increase in greenhouse gas emissions because you're, in essence, opening up another lane, unless all of the revenue that was generated would go to encouraging other options. That would be one way that it could have a greenhouse gas emission benefit.
Any further questions or comments? Then thank you, Ms. Thoman. Was there a question?
Oh, not specific to Ms. Thoman's.
Okay. We do have one more testifier. Did you want to speak before that?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Next speaker is Rick Carter.
Thank you. My name is Rick Carter, and I'm an architect and was a member of the advisory group and very active in the RCI twig. And just to try and one-up Barb a little bit, the contribution of buildings in terms of construction and operation to the greenhouse gas emission in Minnesota is about 45%. So even though you've done a lot, there's still a lot more to do. And since Bill went through the RCI a little bit and compared it to the report, I'm just going to kind of give you one example. What I want to do is talk about what I think you could do, because I think there are a lot of things you can do. If you go to page one of the plan under RCI, bullet point three talks about encouraging new buildings to be ever increasingly cost effective. That sort of bundles two of the RCI proposals. These are the 10 RCI proposals, which all passed unanimously. And in addition to the actions that occurred at last year's session, there's a lot more to be had there. And those two are the two I wanted to focus on are, and you don't have these in front of you, but RCI 3, which is to take what already exists in Minnesota, a set of building guidelines, green building guidelines, which you passed in 2003, that actually applies to state-bonded buildings, and basically kind of ratcheting it up. And then RCI 9, which talks about having a small percentage of the energy needed for a state building to be generated on site. And so what I think you can do is there are actually two bills right now in the House that apply directly to RCI 3. One takes the existing sustainable guidelines that apply to bonded buildings and expands it from being just new buildings to buildings that are renovated, which is a substantial amount of the work that the state does. So I would support that. It also provides some funding. They're called green bonds to allow local units of government to do planning and some additional conservation measures on buildings when they're not required to meet B3. And then there's a separate bill that there's going to be a hearing on Tuesday afternoon at 2:15 that talks specifically about this 2030 challenge direction, which is to incrementally increase energy efficiency of buildings over time to a point where they are essentially carbon neutral in the year 2030, which sounds pretty far out there, but it's not out of the question.
Actually, we had a hearing already today on that bill.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, 12:15. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't at that one. So that's great. So there's a longer presentation at 2:15 on Tuesday if you want to know more about it. So one thing is somebody could take RCI 9 and propose legislation to actually do a small percentage of renewable energy to be required on all state-funded buildings. It gives you the ability to do what you've done in the past, which is lead by example and kind of make a dent in some of these numbers. So that's all I wanted to say, but I'm here for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Questions or comments by committee members? Senator Senjum.
Was Mr. Carter? Mm-hmm. Mr. Carter, you sort of tweaked my interest here. One of the things that I'm personally aware of is that the new laboratory building at the Hormel Institute, which is basically University of Minnesota building, and the whole idea for particularly laboratory buildings up one-pass air, in other words, in and out, and at tremendous energy costs. Do you have any feelings about that? I'm about ready to introduce a bill that says we ought to be able to recirculate some of this air.
Mr. Carter.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm an architect, not a mechanical engineer, so I'm not going to weigh in necessarily on ventilation. I think the main point is the benchmark, the way the guidelines are set up right now, would essentially cover any bonded building, whether it's a lab building or not, and we have about 60 buildings in the program right now, uses Minnesota code as a benchmark and then requires that building to beat that by 30%. And what we can do today, and what some of the funding and the bills in the House are doing right now, in addition to what happens here through some of the SIP funding in Excel's territory, is allow us to model buildings and their energy consumption in an early design phase. So the long answer to your question is there may be the ability to recirculate some of that air to save energy, but there may be many other strategies that we can look at in a lab building that allows us to keep the one pass through. You have to weigh occupant health against energy efficiency, and usually they work in synchronization. Sometimes in lab buildings it's a little bit tougher.
Thank you.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carter, I'm a big fan of geothermal, and in talks with Senator Anderson, she mentions we should almost have a green part of the bonding bill, because it seems like for a lot of state buildings, you know, if they have expansion or HVAC concerns, by the time it whittles down to what they actually get, the amount of money isn't enough to cover to do like a geothermal, which would cost more initially, but the payback would be much greater over time. So I guess I would kind of like your thoughts on when you mentioned a green bonds. Could you go into that a little more? And then if you think the state might be able to address some of that in their facilities.
Sure.
Mr. Carter.
Chair, and members of the committee, it's a perfect example. The way the current green bond bill is written is it would cover two aspects of making buildings more energy efficient. It would cover the upfront costs of doing things like energy modeling and commissioning and additional use of guidelines to make sure you get on the right track. And then it would also cover things very much like geothermal that have very large energy saving potential but may have paybacks that are longer than you would normally adopt. For example, a geothermal system today might be somewhere around a 7 or 8 year payback, assuming straight line energy costs, which won't happen, but that's the way we calculate it today. Little tricky with geothermal because what that's doing is shifting the energy load on a building from other resources to electricity, which based on the way we generate electricity today doesn't proportionally reduce the amount of greenhouse gas emissions, but kind of a detail, and if we could do more on-site generation, we could balance that out. So the bonding bill is trying to do exactly what you're talking about for local units of government, the green bond bill.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
That's my bill, Madam Chair. So, Senator Alcine, if you'd like to sign on, you're very welcome to do that.
Senator Sanjum.
Seldom get these opportunities. Do you believe all governmental, in particular all governmental-sponsored buildings, ought to be LEED certified or meet LEED goals?
Madam Chair, in the state of Minnesota, we're in a unique situation where we have these set of guidelines that were developed, actually started by Hennepin County through an OEA grant in 1995, actually ahead of LEED, very parallel. In some sense now, actually, I would say ahead of LEED. They're certainly regionally specific. So if you were to say, for example, the way the city of St. Paul passed their resolution, either LEED certified or meet the Minnesota Sustainable Guidelines, I'd say yes.
Okay.
Senator Dibble.
If we're wrapping up, Madam Chair.
Okay, then thank you, Mr. Carter.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to say, I think probably what this was a good hearing. It was very interesting. I think we got a lot of good information. I'm still a little unclear about what the Department of Commerce's plans are, because I hear a lot about this being a preliminary report, but they didn't hear much about there being a final report that's submitted by the commissioner, but a kind of an ongoing work effort that might be drawn. I think what we dealt with today was that the statute as written was. The report of the stakeholder process must form the basis for the plan submitted by the commissioner under subdivision 2. And I think there's maybe a difference of interpretation what formed the basis maybe meant. And I think some thought it meant loosely based and others thought it meant based on. And clearly it wasn't drawn specifically to the information in the MCAG report. So it was good to have this conversation and to air some ideas about how aggressively and what to include and whether or not the commissioner was free to include other ideas and drop others and water down others and the like. And so I think at this point we kind of answered some questions that were hanging out there and maybe have some opinions about how closely that plan should have hewed to the MCAG report. But nevertheless, we have some really, really good information from MCAG and maybe some ideas about how to proceed. I want to go back to your idea that we do develop a plan of action. Maybe it's a legislative function and figure out staging and goals and policies and figure out how to pursue those and trigger those on in a way that makes sense.
Senator Dibble, I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, trying to figure out how we would do this. And in fact, as you were talking, I was thinking further about it, wondering if we should form a working group of people that are interested, or, in fact, whether we should develop legislation that actually would lay out what our, strategically what our plan is in terms of the principles we would use in adopting greenhouse gas emission goals, and something that would build until we are able to reach a goal. I only conceptually have an idea, but I think that we could probably make it more concrete and formalize it. And so people that are interested, please let me know, and maybe we can form an informal working group and then bring something to the committee. Thank you. Senator Rosen.
I would certainly enjoy being on that working group because I think, as Senator Dibble said, this has been a very good discussion. And I hope I don't take your thunder, but I would like to personally thank every member on that, on the MCAT group, and the time and the energy you spent on getting these recommendations was just tremendous. And a huge, huge thank you because you did most of the work for us, all the work for us, actually. But perhaps you should have given me more chocolate, Senator. Madam Chair, make me a little sweeter. I just want to
thank you.
I just also want to make sure that we understand the what was passed last year was a goal. It wasn't mandated goal. It was a goal that we are going to try to attain, and there might be some fluctuations in that goals, on those goals, those numbers. For example, in the Transformation Healthcare Task Force, we were mandated to reduce healthcare costs by 20%. Well, we can't reach that by the year 2012. We reached it by the year 2015, but we got there, and we're so excited. And that was also a task force brought together by industry, and we're excited about the work we did. So I just kind of want to frame it up a little bit different to make sure that we remember what we did last year, celebrate that fact, move forward with these goals, but also remember that we have to do it deliberately and thoughtful and in a timely fashion, too. So I would like to be a part of that discussion.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. I think you make some very good points. And I think, you know, there are goals we need to meet. That is required in order for us to eliminate the threat of global warming. But it is important that we do this in a positive way, and we work together so much better if we do this in a positive way and if we're talking about it and doing it collaboratively. So I'm hoping that we can build on the work that we did last year and continue that collaborative process. And I also want to thank you for mentioning that we do need to thank the committee for the hard work they did. I know that you put in dozens of hours at least and worked very hard all through the year, and if it weren't for the time, the energy, and the expertise of all the members, we wouldn't have the product that we do have. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, Senator Sanjom.
Again, not to belabor it, and we need to get out of here, but I think sometimes we sit up here and maybe think not a lot is happening and we're not going fast enough, but just as one example, I will tell you back home where I live in my district, you can read in the paper nearly every night about, the expansion, particularly of the wind. We're looking at some near 700-plus more windmills in our area in the next whatever number of years, a lot of activities, a lot of community meetings, and so on and so forth. So while, up here it may not seem in some cases that we're moving particularly fast. Out in the hinterlands, there's a lot of interest and a lot of energy and a lot of activity going on. So we should not be too forlorn in our thoughts and understand that things are moving forward.
I read in the paper, in the Duluth paper today, that the St. Louis County just put 6 windmills on top of the county building. And so I'm going home looking to look upwards to see the use of those 6 windmills. But there are a lot of innovative ideas out there and a lot of ways that people are very aware and know that we need to be moving forward. And I think there's a lot of people that are helping us to do our work, too. Thank you. And I think we'll end the committee at this time.
Isn't your work the summer?
A couple thank yous.
Area of the buildings.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, because Hormel didn't know how to build a building last year. Our engineers built it.
Did we give out any kind of...
Yeah.